You are listening to Street Roots Radio on X-Ray FM. I'm Hannah Francis. Street Roots Radio is a collaboration between X-Ray FM, KBOO Radio, and local publication Street Roots. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today, I have here with me Street Roots correspondent Anna Wilcox to talk about her recent article, Safe Landing, Portland is a Safe Haven for Trans People, but Lags in Keeping Them Housed. Thanks for being here, Anna.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Hannah.
Yeah, of course. So there's a few different ways we could start this, but I think that we should start with, so there are a lot of trans people in Portland. And your article actually says that Oregon is second only to Washington, D.C. in number of trans people in the U.S. Will you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, so that data comes from a big study from the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law. And it might be, let's see. I think that things are changing now. I think that data was originally collected, let's see, probably it says between 2020 and 2021, looking at the population of LGBTQIA2S+ folks in the United States. And one reason why I included some of this data is because Oregon has a really beautiful and really strong reputation for being just a really safe place for queer folk of all varieties. And there are a lot of queer people that live here. And it like is a really, you know, there's a lot of community here. We have pretty progressive policies when it comes to protecting queer folks and protecting queer rights. And yeah, so like on paper, Oregon looks really is a, you know, solid choice. And we have a lot of like just a really beautiful, vibrant community here.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, as your article says, you know, Portland is maybe actually not that good at keeping those folks in like good living situations. And so you start off your article with a story of this person who we're calling Lycan, which is a pseudonym, who's a trans man who has kids and he's living in Portland. Will you tell me a little bit about his situation?
Yeah. So, Lycan actually reached out to us, and I'm going to use the pseudonym, to share his story. He had I think this is a story that unfortunately happens, too often, where, they were a stay-at-home parent, and his partner suddenly left, he was basically left kind of to deal with the aftermath of that and the financial aftermath of that, which is really hard, especially when you have a kid or a daughter who is homeschooled, and then he is pregnant, so he has a baby on the way, his process of trying to get help, which he needs immediately, which he needs right now, whether it's rental assistance or just financial assistance in general, to you know, stay in their current home and to just have access to basic needs now that they've kind of found themselves in this situation that they weren't expecting. It's been a difficult process for him. And I'm very grateful that he reached out and very, very grateful that he shared his story with us. He's just been going through hoop after hoop, trying to access like some sort of safety net that just hasn't been there. He's got a very long list of all these different organizations that he's called. He's been facing a lot of red tape. He's reached out to city councilors even. And I got a message saying city councilors, like they, you know, had told him that he can't that a city councilor can't help individuals directly, and so they were given a resource list. But it seems like he's been given a lot of resource lists, and people keep kind of referring him to other resource lists, and none of that really is streamlined, and then none of it is really helpful, like when you need emergency assistance right away, especially because he's pregnant, his baby is almost due, and he's getting, when you're that far along in pregnancy, it can become really difficult to do basic things like walk to the grocery store, which is what he does, and just, it's really, yeah, he needs assistance right now. And I asked him why he wanted to talk with us and share his story, and his main point or the takeaway, and hopefully, Lycan, if you're listening to this, I hope that I'm doing this justice. But the takeaway is he really wants to, he hopes that people in power can start to do something to change the system. And yeah, I think there has been some recent policies that, like, are, hopefully maybe going to change some things, but that doesn't really help, like, the need for immediate funds right now and the dire situation that people find themselves in when they, have a sudden life change, like a partner leaves, and that's something that's beyond your control. And then, Lycan's really been left in the lurch, it seems, when I talked with them.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. It seems like a really tough spot to be in. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on the specific roadblocks that they're facing, or that he's facing, and that other trans people who are trying to stay housed are facing.
Yeah, so this is a really big story, and there's a lot to cover about this topic. And that's one of the things that I, in reporting it, yeah, it was really, it's actually quite a difficult story for me to write for a variety of reasons. But there's just like so much that needs to change. And several people that I talked with did give me some very good recommendations for, like, potential solutions that could make things a lot easier. But the number one thing I'd say that, like, people are experiencing is just, like, the amount of kind of, like, bureaucracy and the amount of red tape, so to speak, when it comes to, like, trying to navigate like emergency funds and emergency assistance, right? So, like, with Lycan, like, he got, like, he would call someone, and then they would say they need a referral from 211, or which is the kind of like local support line here in Portland. And then they'd call 211, and then, they would say that he didn't need a referral. Just kind of that, like, all of the, like everywhere that you are turning, it just seems like there's something. Yeah, like, I don't know, like Lycan described it as like a circle, right? Like going around in a circle, trying to figure out, like, who has what, and like who has people available, who has case managers available. One thing that isn't in the article, I know that sometimes people, when they're in emergency situations, use services like GoFundMe or Meal Train, but Lycan brought up that because they're trying to access state services like TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, like anytime their income goes up by $50, they have to, like, report that income. And so even if they did, launch a GoFundMe campaign, then that can, there's like a lot of paperwork that he would have to, then accommodate for, because the, like, there are strict requirements for income reporting for some of these social services. So it's just like one thing after another after another, and just it's just a lot of hoops, right? It's a lot of hoops that you have to go through, and that was kind of like something that really struck a chord for me. It's just like once somebody finds themselves in a situation where their housing is at risk, like, then, it becomes almost, it's like a full-time job going and trying to navigate all these different services and figure out what all the rules are. They're not necessarily, like, easy to find, right? There's not like a roadmap to, like, hey, you're facing eviction. Here's the roadmap you need to follow in order to, get support right away. There's th that doesn't really seem to exist, and or if it does exist, it's difficult for people to find. It's not super accessible, and like lichen is, from what I've can tell, is extremely proactive and has been extremely proactive about calling, just starting their day, making phone calls, and yeah, it's just, I mean, it's like a hustle. Like, I don't know how else to say it. It's like a social services hustle, trying to get out there and just find support for yourself. And when you're pregnant, especially, when you're 34, 35 weeks pregnant, like that's hard. That's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like in Portland there are a lot of services, but actually accessing them is pretty difficult. And you mentioned some like horrific number of anti-LGBTQIA2S plus bills in the US. I think it's like 525 or something like that, which are currently like being introduced. These are not existing bills. These are new bills that are being introduced. And so I wonder how that's impacting the scene here right now.
So yes, the impetus for this article is that the city of Portland just like I think it was it March or February. I like forget because time is passing quickly. But the city of Portland just passed an ordinance that amends the civil code to like further strengthen protections for queer and trans people. When it comes to housing and employment, it's an anti-discrimination. It just like bolsters the anti-discrimination protections
Yeah,
here.
that was in March.
March. Okay, perfect. So yeah, so that's great, and it shows that the city is really making kind of a commitment to making the city a safe haven for queer and trans people. The issue becomes there, like right now, this like there is a queer and trans like refugee crisis in the US in terms of there's so many anti queer discrimination bills that are happening right now, especially particularly in red states, but they're popping up even in other states. Like right now the ACLU is tracking some in Washington and also in California. Like obviously if your state is restricting like your access to restrooms and restricting your access to like sports teams for your kids and restricting like trying to ban drag or restricting your ability to just express like yourself in a manner that fits you, like that's like it's just not safe. It's just not safe. So in talking with people for this article, I did talk with like several, I think like at least three of the people that I had talked with came from Texas. They moved here from Texas. And so Lycan mentioned in living in Texas, they felt that he just couldn't, yeah, like he said he faced like people like were laughing him out of job interviews, and just he faced harassment in the grocery store. He faced harassment in front of, his child, he said. So it's just not a safe place. And so like it makes sense, like but like it's important that people have a safe place to go to. And so Oregon, like because there's such a beautiful community here, it has been one of those safe places, except like we still don't have a functioning like social services network, especially when it comes to housing. So like that's kind of the main issue. Like one of the things that came up was that, I mean, there's a lot of things that came up in this article. It's like far too much to be able to like for me to even fully articulate very well. But one of the things that came up is that we don't really have like culturally specific housing services here for adults in Portland to the extent that is maybe needed. So people like when they are like trans people and queer people, like when they are facing eviction or then they have to go into the shelter system, like one thing that came up was that Yeah, like there's still a lot of like discrimination, like interpersonal discrimination that happens even in a progressive, city like Portland, where they might face discrimination from other tenants who are harassing them for whatever reason. In those, and then like different, like not using the correct pronouns and dead naming, kind of some of those things that came up that make the space feel unsafe for queer and trans folks. And because of that environment, a lot of folks that I'm, from what I gathered in the reporting, like are opting or would prefer to stay in cars or prefer to. There's a lot of like couch surfing or like mutual aid groups that kind of support short-term motel stays, and kind of like different like mutual aid community groups that will come in and try to offer some assistance. But that assistance is just, maybe like $50 here or there, trying to, put someone in a motel for a night. In my original, reporting for this article, like some of the earlier discussions that I had, like I was asking someone what the about kind of like the landscape of housing for trans folks here in Oregon when people first come from red states, or when people first are trying to get away from maybe families who aren't understanding, or when people just have a need and they need to get to a safe place. And the person looked at me and said, like, well, do you have a spot on your couch or on the floor? Because that's what it is. And so, and that really stuck with me, that there's a lot of it's beautiful that like so many community members are stepping in to support each other, but like that's just not enough. There needs to be somewhere queer friendly to go, or places where people that are more non-binary, where people don't have to decide, like to be either a man or a woman in order to use those services or access those services. And like those are all things that are, really big roadblocks for helping and keeping people just like off, safe and out of tents and cars. But then also what came up quite a lot, is that even though like shelters and overnight shelters are an amazing and vital harm reduction service, to keep people like warm and they're necessary, that still isn't housing, right? That's not housing. One thing that came up is just like the need to really expand rental assistance programs. And I know that the like city council, I think, just opted to give like $9 million for rental assistance. I'm not an economist, but to me that doesn't seem like enough money. So and it just like earlier this year, like Oregon kind of faced a record number of evictions as well. And so one thing that came up that in the reporting, Kaylin Berry from Rahab Sisters mentioned to me that it's, much cheaper to keep people housed, and when they have an apartment or when they have housing and they just need rental assistance, it's actually much cheaper and much more effective to keep people housed than it is to try to get people back into their housing after they've lost it. Because once you lose your housing, she said, you can lose your documents, you can lose your day-to-day becomes much more difficult, and then accessing things becomes much more expensive. Once you have an eviction on your record, it's harder to get into housing. If you've show that you have like a gap in your housing, kind of like you have a gap in a job or a resume, then you might have to pay more because you don't come across as secure to the landlord or the property owner. So you might have to pay like an extra fee or something.
Anything else that you want to add, and then also where people can find your article in History Roots?
Yeah, so you can find this article in the upcoming issue of Street Roots. It'll have the cover, so you can buy it from local vendors. Actually, please buy it from local vendors. That should be the number one place that you go to read this article. You should go to a local vendor and you should give them cash or Venmo, and get this article from them. If you're not in town, which is like the only reason why you can't buy from a local vendor, then you should read it online at streetroots.org. And yeah, I just also wanted to just give a shout out to say to Lycan. Thank you so much for sharing your story with me and with us at Street Roots. If there's anybody else who would like to talk to me about some of these stories, please, reach out to Street Roots or reach out to me directly. My name is Anna Wilcox. I'm sure you can find me online. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Street Roots Radio, an interview with Street Roots correspondent Anna Wilcox. For X-Ray FM, I'm Hannah Francis.